Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up or shut up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Just over a week away. The draft is coming soon. Until then, we're going to continue to bring you prospects. You are now talking with TD. I appreciate each of you for tuning in for another week, another episode, another opportunity for us to talk shop. This is what we do. I thank you for allowing me and Calvin on the switches there to carry us through the draft season. There's not much else going on in the sports world, so it's been great getting the opportunity to provide this coverage for you guys. Is what we love to do. But first things first, I want to look at a running back contract. You guys heard the news. You guys heard what happened. Christian McCaffrey, 4 years, $64 million. From what I've heard, it is a reported $32 million guaranteed. You like it? I do. But one of the things that Calvin and I were talking about before we hit the air was how it seems like there's going to be a pivot as far as paying running backs. And I think Ezekiel Elliott set the tone. I feel like Christian McCaffrey is going to carry it. We're going to see what happens with Derrick Henry's deal. Obviously, you guys know my stance, and I'll get into that a little bit more in a second. But then you also have Green Bay Packers with Aaron Jones. There's a number of deals coming up that really are going to have to really just challenge this refusal to pay running backs. But when you look at McCaffrey, I like what the Panthers said. They don't look at him as just a running back. They look at him as a playmaker. Guess what? That's the same way you should look at Derrick Henry. However, it is clear McCaffrey has a different skill set, right? We're talking about over 100 receptions last year. We're talking about over 1,000 yards last year. I mean, that's ridiculous. And then we're talking about, 15 rushing touchdowns. We're talking about, I believe it's 1,300 rushing yards. Don't quote me on that. I could give you the exact numbers if I look it up. But the bottom line is Christian McCaffrey accounted for over 2,500 yards last year. Yeah, 1,387 rushing yards, 15 touchdowns, 4 receiving, 19 touchdowns total. That's the type of production you have to pay. And I know as soon as the deal was done, Calvin being a producer, we've gotten to a point where we think about each other a lot. We'll see something and say, you know what, let me see what so-and-so, right? And as soon as I saw the deal, I text Calvin, hey, what do you think? And then we had a back and forth. Calvin isn't fully in support of it, and I get it because of the touches, because of the position. But after talking, we came to the conclusion that, you know what? He's not going to be able to sustain that amount of touches over a long period of time. And I agree. 400 touches last year. That is an awful lot. But the thing is, like Derrick Henry, like some of these other backs, you don't see him get blasted often. He does a really good job of controlling when he's going to get hit and how he's going to get hit. Now, let's talk about Derrick Henry, because obviously the stigma that is placed on him is he's a two-down back. He's a classic throwback running back. I want to say this. Let's give him a chance to show that he could be a three-down back. I mean, if you look at it, and I get it. The coaching staff has consistently put Deion Lewis in on third downs. I think Deion Lewis played between 65 and 70% of the third down snaps last year. I get it. I want to see how Henry can respond if he's put in that situation. And you guys know that I'm a big advocate of Derrick Henry. I really appreciate his game. I know that he sometimes can be like an airplane when it comes to running routes, as far as like on the ground, an airplane on the ground. But I really want to see how they could get him to become more of a third down back. I will say this. You saw progress last year. He got much better in pass pro. Go back and watch Dennis Kelly's touchdown pass. I know it's play action and it's a tackle eligible. But go back and watch it, and you'll see him darn near flip a guy that was coming on the backside to give a little bit extra time for that throw to be made. All I'm saying is Derrick Henry is a legit player. You need to pay him. So, okay, that being said, what should the deal look like? I would propose a deal for 4 years. You ready? You ready, Calvin? Nah. I would propose a deal for 4 years, $70 million. Now, everybody's saying, oh, my God, how can you do that? Listen, that deal, the $70 million, the 4 years, that's funny money. The nuts and potatoes, nuts and bolts, the meat and potatoes of it is the guaranteed money. And when you look at the guaranteed money, Ezekiel Elliott's guarantee, total guarantee, we're talking about a true guarantee. Guarantee against injury, cap, and performance was $28 million. Le'Veon Bell, $27 million. Christian McCaffrey, a reported $32 million. Derrick Henry, $34.2 million. That's where I'm coming in. It gives him a higher average than the contract, the franchise tag. But if we do the math, when you look at the average over that deal, we're talking about $17.5 million. Again, this is funny money. Now, what you could do is tweak this to be backloaded as far as like the higher cap hit in the end of the contract. You could front load it as far as guaranteed money being in there. You could do it to where this year, he's at 14 to 15 guaranteed for this year, and that cap number could go up. All you have to do is over those first 3 years, get it to where you're equaling $34.2 million. I personally feel as though Henry is definitely worth that. That is what TD had to say. That's what I needed to get off my chest. We shall see what happens. As you know, John Robinson has said they are definitely looking to get a deal done. Both parties want to get a deal done before the July 15th deadline. Stay tuned to that, and stay tuned to this show, because we're going to bring you one of the guys that could help Derrick Henry get the rushing title again this upcoming year. We got Lucas Niang out of TCU, and then we got a couple cornerbacks. We're going to go with Javelin Guidry out of Utah, one of the slept upon nickel corners. Then we got a guy that line up on the outside and press the heck out of receivers, and A.J. Green from Oklahoma State. So stay tuned. We will be right back.
This is Corey Davis, and you're talking with TD.
Yes, yes, back from the break, talking with TD. You heard Big Pun on the radio. We're going to bring in a big punisher himself, TCU offensive lineman Lucas Niang. Lucas, what's good, man?
How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I appreciate you coming on. I had to get you on because I enjoyed our conversation at your podium at the combine, and also obviously enjoyed your game. So I want to get right into some of the things that you have going on right now, as far as the medical check for the recheck, actually for the hip. How are you right now as far as being able to, you know, get into the swing of things?
Oh, I'm 100% right now. I'm done rehabbing. I'm just working on striking and getting my endurance back and stuff. Now, if we had done part days, I would have did everything.
Oh, that's what's up. That's good stuff. Yeah. So you have the range of movement and everything. You're in good shape from that perspective?
Yeah, I'm training now at this point.
Good.
Get a video in a couple.
Oh, you going to have a video for us?
Yeah, I'm going to put one together tomorrow. We can get on the field because, you know, they close everything out here.
Yeah.
So you're trying to get onto the high school field.
Okay, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. Yeah. as far as that injury is concerned, it was a torn hip labrum. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yep.
How did that happen?
I did it in 2018 going into fall camp. So I just tore it. Thought it was a strain, so I didn't practice for like 2 days. Just went back into it. Bothered me for the season. You play banged up all the time. And then I found out going into the 2019 season in the offseason, found out it was torn, but I didn't want to get surgery. They told me to get surgery or try some less invasive methods, so I went with that. You know, it worked for a little bit, but it just kept getting worse by week when the season started, so I couldn't finish.
Now, it was after the Texas game. That's when you decided you got to shut it down, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
And you were really emotional after that game. What was it, just the thrill of that victory, or did you kind of have a feeling it was going to be time to shut it down? What was going on in your mind at that point?
Yeah, that was like the most painful game for me physically. So after the game, I just knew that was really it. I couldn't move the way I wanted to. It was really, really bad. And I just knew it just sucked at the end of my season right there.
Yeah. So now what I want to do is just kind of rewind all the way back to before college. You lived in Switzerland at one point?
Yeah, when I was like 4 years old, my dad was there for work. So we were there, and my little brother was born there. So he lived there for like 2 years. I don't really remember it too much.
Yeah, yeah. And you have dual citizenship? You have citizenship in France and here in the U.S.?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, can you do me a favor? I want you to say I'm the best in French. Let the listeners hear you say that. I'm the best.
Is this the mail?
That's simple.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So your parents, obviously, you know, you grew up in that household. What was it like growing up? Like, were there differences as far as, like, between yourself and some of your friends growing up, being as though, you know, it was a French dominance as far as the household's concerned?
My parents, I guess they stressed different things growing up. School was always like a huge thing. My parents always stressed school. Anything I started, my mom always made sure I finished it, whether that was sports or anything. No quitting in my house.
Gotcha.
My parents just made me do a lot growing up.
Yeah. Well, it's helped mold you into who you are today. One of the other things in high school in Connecticut, you played. Yeah. Zach Allen was one of your teammates.
Yeah, me and Zach played together.
So both of you guys were on the defensive line, dominating, but you also played offensive line. So when you got to TCU, what made you focus on offensive line specifically?
That's mainly what I was recruited for, and I don't know. Throughout the whole recruitment process, I was set on being an offensive tackle. I think I like it better, honestly.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's all I liked it better in high school.
So you're not a guy that's in search of glory. You just want to go out and do your job, because that's pretty much what offensive linemen do.
Put on for my teammates. You know, I want them to trust me, hold me accountable.
Yeah. And then when you look at some of the things that you did in high school, I mean, you played all kinds of sports. Your mother is an outstanding tennis player. You played tennis. I kind of find it hard to picture a guy your size on the tennis court, though.
I was smaller in high school than back then, but yeah, I played everything growing up. France made sure I was busy, that's for sure. I played all kinds of sports: baseball, lacrosse, soccer. Yeah.
Everybody always mentions how you could pull things from different sports, and I get it. Like, I played baseball and football. I played wide receiver in football. Playing baseball in the outfield helped me focus on ball skills, right? So my question to you, because I've never, ever talked to someone who played tennis and also football. So was there anything that you could kind of pull from tennis to kind of apply as far as your skill set is concerned to football?
I can definitely handle our coordination, but I think just the combination of all the sports. When I was really, you know, tall at a young age, you're a little clumsy. I felt like I was clumsy until about the sixth grade. And playing all those sports just helped me with my hand-eye coordination and stuff. You know,
and then you get to TCU. You have played left tackle in high school. You get to TCU, And now you got to flip to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a little bit about it at the combine. I didn't record it, so my listeners can't hear it. But can you kind of go over the difference and how you can make that transition from left side and right to the right side?
The first thing I had to do was I couldn't just flip my snaps from left to right. I had to find what was comfortable and what I could move in on the right side. And then just it kind of took a ton of time. It took a while to perfect my pass fit and stuff. After I went home during the summertime, and that's when I made the most progress, just working on my fit every single day.
And it's interesting because you mentioned working on your pass sets, and you have a variety of them in your portfolio. And then in addition to that, you're one of the best pass blockers in this draft. So when you look at that ability to kind of like hone that technique, what was the key for you in being able to develop that over the years?
No, just hard work and dedication. You know, I watch my parents. I learned a lot from them. And I saw how they work. I worked the same, and I really just got better through a ton of practice and a lot of hard work. So, I mean, I think I could get better at anything I set my mind to.
Gotcha. And then I thought it was interesting because you replaced Halapulavati Vaitai. I was in Philly when he was drafted in 16, and he's a guy that had to play both sides as well. Mm-hmm. So that was something. So I'm imagining that's the kind of footsteps that you're following. But when you look at 2018 – I think that was really your trademark year. I want to talk about that Ohio State game because it's no secret. Chase Young said that you were a problem to deal with, and he said that you were one of the best that he went against. So when you look at that Ohio State game, what was your mindset approaching it? Knowing you're going against Chase Young, knowing you're going against Bosa and some of those guys.
I was kind of excited about this one, man. I spent that whole week before just watching a lot of film, you know, getting ready. I didn't want to go into the game feeling like I wasn't prepared. We knew we wanted to pop pass rushers, so we got ready. It was really exciting. I wish Nick hadn't got hurt as early, but it was a good game, man. It was really exciting. Chase was good, not as good as he was this year, but I could tell he's going to be real good. I only got to go against both a little bit. It was exciting. I feel good after the game. Watching on film, you know, it's never as good as you think it is. But I definitely enjoyed that game for sure.
And
wish we had won.
And that whole season, you gave up zero sacks. I mean, that's crazy. I was talking with your agent before you came on, and he mentioned that. And I was like, oh, and I know that he had zero holding calls as well as no false starts. So that shows the discipline that you said – you know, your parents help raise you with.
Yes.
And then along those lines with that discipline, you made a goal to improve your run blocking.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's what I tried to focus on, running for the season. It was slow because of the injuries. I couldn't get as good as I wanted to, practice as much as I wanted to, but I definitely got better in the offseason.
How did that change? Because I know you had to use different movements because you couldn't get into your set as much, you know, like you wanted to because of the injury. How did that change it, and what did that kind of teach you to deal with as you were going through that process?
I had to change just how I played. I couldn't vertical set the way I usually do. I always had to step up and to step backwards, run blocking. I couldn't stay on my stance as long as I wanted to or get as low, so I had to adjust that. I was really just trying to play hard, survive. Biggest thing it taught me was just to be mentally tough. I played out there. I played hard. And it taught me to take care of my body. I had to take care of my body more than ever before just so I could make it.
And when you look at some of the things that you had to do, you know, as far as the guys you had to take on, like I know LJ Collier, he was very complimentary of you, you know, one of your former teammates. But what is it about you? Is it your long arms that helps you so much? Is it your agility? Because you also, you look at how you get to the second level, and you're pretty well in tune with being able to make that second level block as well in the run game. So what is it about you that makes you such a good offensive lineman?
I think it's definitely a mix of agility, vertical feet movement, horizontal, but also just my reach. I can use my reach. You know, if my hands get knocked down, I can cover with my feet. I have good balance, good extension. I don't usually miss my target.
And as a guy that's 6'6", how do you deal with some of those shorter edge rushers? Because obviously they naturally have the leverage advantage. Yeah. How do you deal with those guys?
You really just got to get lower. that's the best way I deal with it. I just get lower.
Now, one of the things, if you have more, I'll take more.
As long as I can get to that target, I'm good.
So is it more about, like, giving them a longer arc to go around to get to the quarterback? Is that kind of what you have to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, give them a longer arc to just stop their momentum, take them off their path.
Who was the toughest guy you had to go against outside of LJ Collier?
I was going to say
Bam Banigal,
my teammate.
You say your ex-teammate, LJ Collier?
Yeah, Bam Banigal.
Oh, Banigal. Yeah, he came out last year. He's in Indy. Okay.
Yeah.
If you had to say someone that wasn't on your team, who would you say was the toughest?
It would be a D-tackle, Daniel Wise. He played a little bit at the end, but mostly D-tackle. But I said Daniel Wise from Kansas.
Okay. I remember – Yeah, I saw him at the East-West Shrine Week. Yeah, he was definitely a good one. Nice. You got it right there in your library. You remember who was who. Yeah. A part of the part of being, you know, a guy on the team, one of the standout players, you have to be a leader. In what ways did football teach you about leadership?
Definitely taught me how to lead by example. Looking around, you know, people are going to watch my lead. They're going to see how I act and respond to it. It also taught me to lead in different ways. Not everybody responds to the same kind of leadership. And I just learned that not everybody's internally motivated. You know, sometimes you have to say something.
And a part of the leadership that you provided was having an impact off of the field. Can you take a moment just to share a little bit about some of the social – you're a social work major, but some of the things that you've done as far as with the homeless and your missions that you've been on?
Growing up, I went on like 3 mission trips. Went to Puerto Rico, went to Alabama, did that stuff. At TCU, went to a MHMR center, did some community service a couple times. Just worked with people. My mom made me do community service growing up too. That was kind of just part of what we do, I guess, to give back.
That's awesome. Mm. Yeah, and. If you end up here in Nashville with the Titans, there's definitely a lot of work to be done. That tornado came through last month and hit the area hard. So you would fit right in. So that being said, how have things gone just as far? Like, what were some of the things that the Titans said that they like about you?
Just my game, my athleticism, my ability. Our play as well as my intelligence.
All of which project well into playing in a zone scheme. Mm-hmm. So there's a fit, obviously. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Well, what are some of the things you're doing now? You're able to work out, you said. Are you going through different video interviews and those type of things?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They had video interviews all week last week. Went before that, just doing a lot of that. Phones always ringing, you got to keep them.
Any crazy questions coming up in those video interviews, or were those all pretty much at the combine?
Mostly at the combine. I haven't had anything too crazy in a while.
Gotcha. Well, Lucas, like I said, I appreciate you coming on. I think there's a good chance I'll be seeing you all year. You know, I think you're going to end up right here with the Titans, but we'll see what happens. But again, thanks for coming on. Wish you the best with everything. Stay safe and keep it up, man. You're going to find out where you're going to be in just over a week.
Yes, sir. Thank you. You too.
All right.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
We're going to let that play a little bit. Why? Because that's Wu-Tang. It's a Wu Wednesday. We're back from the break talking with TD. That song is entitled Daytona 500. Listen, folks. Our next guest, he could go to the Daytona 500 and run with the cars that are driving in it. you know what it is. We're bringing in Utah DB Javelin Guidry. Javelin, what's going on, man?
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm doing really well. I hope you can appreciate the theme music that we hit you with.
Yes, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
That's what's up, man. So for those of you who somehow don't know, this is a guy, he graded out at a 4.29 at the combine. So clearly he was moving.
Yes,
definitely moving. Javelin, I want to ask you, has the way certain people view you, you know, from what you've seen as far as feedback is concerned, has that changed since you went out there and ran that 40?
It definitely has. I've talked to a lot more people, specifically like other football players and track runners, just on my speed and like how they're asking like how you get so fast or running tips and just congratulating me. So it's been a lot. It's been great.
You know, the thing that's crazy though, it's not like you got fast overnight. That's the thing that cracks me up, right? I mean, state champion in California and in Texas, is that correct? In high school?
Yes, sir.
We're talking about two of the fastest two of the fastest states in the country.
Yes, back to back.
But then on top of that, 21 reps on the bench at the combine. So you're kind of like a jackrabbit, right? You got the strength and the speed.
Yes, sir. Some people label me as a track guy playing football. It was always football first. So
I like that.
I've
like
been
that.
Strong.
And that's what I was going to ask you next, is why are you a football guy that happened to run track and not a track guy playing football?
Well, my dad, he put me in track in about seventh grade just to get faster for football. And I obviously excelled higher than he thought that I would. And I just kept doing track and in the off season of football. And then at Utah, they unfortunately didn't have a track team, so I wasn't able to run except for my sophomore spring. I ran unattached, just on my own, just wanted to compete, and got back into it and ran the 60-meter indoor and then competed at the track and field championships in New York. So it was great.
That's what's up. And I'm glad you mentioned your dad, because he played ball as well, right? Running back for UCLA?
Yes, he played DB at UCLA.
DB? Oh, okay. Pardon me. So it's – you're carrying out the family business, I'm assuming.
Yes, I am.
And at one point he told you that you needed to convert from running back to DB. Is that the case?
Yes, it was before high school, probably after my freshman year, because I was a running back at number 28. While I wore 28, Adrian Peterson, he was my favorite player. And he told me that you'll have a longer career playing DB instead of running back. Running back, you getting hit all the time, and I just gave it a try, and here I am today.
You mentioned getting hit all the time. Now you're playing DB, but you're in a situation where you're delivering the hits. How much different is it? Because you're one of the few guys that's a pure, like, you're a nickel straight up. Like, you're not saying, okay, how will this guy project moving inside? You've done it. So what really is the difference as far as the level of physicality that's required to play? Because I've seen you, you know, you're playing the box a lot. So what's required to be able to do that?
Well, I'll say the nickel position is like a faster linebacker. You have to be able to cover the speed and shifty receivers out in space, and you're going to have to, like, get your hands dirty and be a linebacker and be in the box and come in and fit in the outside gaps. So it's just interesting position, and you got to be very versatile, and I enjoy playing it.
At 5'9", 191, you got that fire hydrant type of build, you know what I mean? How much does that help you when it comes time to come up and be an assistant in run support?
Yeah, so I just use my size to my advantage and go low and wrap the legs up just quick and easy on. I'll try and get pulled, like, I'll go up against pulled linemen coming at me. I'll just get low and use my quickness as well to get around and make the tackle. So
it's funny he mentions linemen. Calvin, what were we talking about before we got Javelin on. I had told you that you're playing inside. You got to take on offensive linemen. Here it is, case in point. When it comes to that Utah defense, I mean, daggone, it was nine of you guys, eight because Zach Moss is a running back. But, man, what's going on out there in Utah? That's a lot of talent to be coming to the combine. I mean, it's not something that's normal for that university.
Yes, it was. We had a great defense last year, and starts with the coaching staff, Coach Scally and Coach Shaw, and the defensive staff. They did a great job developing us as football players, but as men as well. And we just drew close together. We're family on defense, and we just wanted to go out and compete each and every week, and we have fun out there, make plays.
And that secondary, especially, you know, yourself as well as some of the other guys, obviously you're working with Coach Shaw. He's clearly doing something right. What's some of the things that you've been able to pull from him in your time there?
Just the position in general, just being able to work hard and on my technique. And he made sure that every little detail mattered. And he would make sure that we would try to be as perfect as possible at the corner position. And he was just a great coach for me out there in Utah.
What would you say are some of the best things about you? What is the best thing about you as a DB? What do you bring to the table?
I'll say I have world-class speed. I'm able to show it, but as well as my strength as well. I put on 21 reps, and I believe I'm able to run with receivers downfield and as well as tackle. So that's important as a DB.
What about understanding route concepts? Because that's something I saw in the Washington State game. In particular, there was one play where you came off a route and drifted into the seam, and you almost made the one-handed pick, but you still were able to get there. You know, so what goes into being able to understand those route concepts and know what you have to do in those situations?
Yes, I believe being inside, I developed an understanding of knowing all positions on the defense, and knowing that, it made me be able to understand concepts better. So I'm able to put myself in positions to make more plays. And like that Washington State play, I actually peeled off last second and made a play on it. So just things like that.
Yeah, it's funny you recognize that right away. What would you say are some of the other games? I thought the USC was a good game too this past year. But what would you say are three games that showcase Javelin Guidry as a prospect?
I'll say Oregon State. That was a good game. Washington State and Arizona. That's a good game as well.
The Texas, you faced Devin Duvernay, right?
Yes.
He's a slot machine. You're a slot stopper. What stood out to you about that matchup?
He's a great player. He's fast and strong and downfield. He does a great job using his body control, catching the football. So that was a great and competitive matchup that game.
Now, outside of yourself, you know, watching your dad, I'm sure you watched him a lot, and he was someone that you looked up to. Are there any players that you watched? I mean, you've always played DB, so I would imagine you watched somebody, you know, when you were coming up. Are there any particular guys?
I watch a lot of, like, Tyrann Mathieu and Buda Baker.
Okay.
What about, like, the same size? And just the way they make plays out there, regardless of size, just tackling as well. They play in the box and everywhere, so that's what I feel like I can do.
So that's the kind of impact, a Buda Baker and Tyrann Mathieu type impact you feel that you can make at the next level?
Yes, sir.
Got it. I like that. Buda Baker's a guy that, I don't know, a lot of DBs don't mention, but he's such an outstanding player, so I'm glad you mentioned him. How did the meetings go for you throughout the process? Obviously now, you know, things are different, but when you look at the combine and right after that, how did your contact with teams go?
So it was a great experience at the combine, being able to talk with the coaches face-to-face. We had the formal and informal interviews, and now after the combine, due to the virus we got going on, we're not able to visit the coaches. So FaceTime calls and just calls over the phone, being able to talk schemes and concepts and just building the relationships.
Are they on those Skype calls? Are you getting a chance to like do any whiteboard stuff, or is it just mostly, hey, what happened in this situation? Why did you react that way? What do you do? Like that type of conversation, or are you getting a chance to actually show your football IQ on a whiteboard?
It's a mixture of all that.
Nice.
So call me. We'll talk about my stuff. So I'll draw up my defense, and he'll show me plays up on the iPad, just hold it up on the phone. And then we'll go into whatever team I'm talking to, their defense and the schemes. And I'll have to draw it for him. I'll have like a piece of paper and pen right in front of me, and I'll just show it to him. And then we'll just talk through different concepts the offense runs and how their defense can relate to it. So it's just talking football.
I like that. And that's, I'm sure you're comfortable doing that. This is a Titans show, so I have to ask you from a Titans perspective, you know, looking at a guy that could play the slot. This is a team that they go against the likes of Kenny Stills, Will Fuller. The Texans will move those guys into the slot and let them run those streaks. You know, they go against T.Y. Hilton and the Colts. What makes you, like, how does your speed transfer to the football field to be able to turn and run with those guys but then not panic when that ball is thrown deep and coming your way?
Just be able to trust my speed and my technique, starting first technique and or on press or off, and then just running with them downfield, just trusting my technique because they'll try to speed up to go vertical but then break it down real fast. So just trusting the technique and speed is the main thing.
Yeah, no, and that's a good thing. When you have that speed to be able to run with a guy like that, I'm sure – it does cause you to not have to panic because you know you'll run step for step with them.
Yes. So I'll be able to undercut route as well.
Yeah.
Advantage.
Yeah, and that's something else you did in that was it the Washington State game or it might have been USC. You picked up an under route and you did a good job. You didn't undercut it, but you just did a good job picking him up and running with him. So that's something else you bring to the table. I definitely want to make sure the listeners know. Last thing for you, what's next in this? Like, how do you go about navigating the rest of this month? I mean, you're going to know where you're going to be for the next 3 to 4 years in a matter of days. So how do you go about navigating and staying ready so that when that opportunity arises, you can make the most of it?
Mm-hmm, yeah, just treating it like every day. So just working 1% each day on my craft was physical or mental, and still taking calls from teams, so being open for that, but just working every day. My brother's here with me as well, so I'm able to go out with someone else and train.
Does he run like you?
Not as fast as me, no.
But fast
He's
enough.
Taller than me, though. Yeah.
There you go. Well, there you have it, folks. Utah DB Javelin Guidry running into a stadium near you soon. Keep your eyes on him, folks. Javelin, I appreciate you, man.
I appreciate you bringing me on. Thank
for
you.
For sure.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byard, and I'm talking with TD.
Okay, here we go. Another opportunity to talk shop. You know how it is, man. As a former receiver, I always got to talk to the DBs. We're not supposed to get along, but you know what? We're going to make it work. AJ Green, Oklahoma State. This is a guy that loves press coverage. And I had to get you on, AJ, because I wanted to talk about your press coverage skills. But first and foremost, how's it going?
It's going good so far. Just quarantining and working out and staying safe.
Hey, that's all you could do right now, man. Control what you can control, and that's pretty much it. So that being said, let's talk about your press skills, because that's something that stood out to me in the multiple games. I mean, I watched you against West Virginia multiple times, the Oklahoma game. I mean, you name it, you're in press and it really stands out. You and Mims had some battles going against Baylor. So what is it about press coverage that you love so much?
About press coverage, it's just me getting in their face, getting hands-on, and trying my best to not allow any free releases. And I feel like I'm very technical and I'm very sound with my movements and judgments. And I played a lot of corner over the time, so being up there, I kind of get a feel for them. And it's just no wide receiver wants to come off the ball and have somebody in the face. Or they all want, like, free releases or kind of just to where they can initiate the first movement. And with press, I can kind of get my hands on and kind of just disrupt them and throw up the timing a little bit.
And your multiple reps of playing press covers, does it kind of come off to you that receivers take that personally? Because I know I used to take it personally. You come up and press me. Like I feel like that's – you're challenging my manhood.
Yeah, no doubt. I feel like anybody, if you just step up in their face, they're gonna take that as a challenge. And especially with receivers, they kind of feel like, oh, you think, like, you can handle me? You think you could press me? Like, you think you get a hand on me type of thing? And I feel like that's a confidence builder for me is game in, game out, lots of rep of press man coverage. And I'm just trying to take the receiver out.
I love that approach. I love that mindset. So let's talk about some of the techniques. I mean, do you use a one-arm bar, two-arm bar? Like, how do you kind of vary how you want to press and disrupt that guy at the line of scrimmage?
It goes week by week in the film room. I kind of see how he reacts to other corners pressing him, see what he likes, if he likes the one-arm bar or if he's waiting for the first punch. And then that's how he gets into his movement or kind of like feathering technique. I just kind of see, and I go into the game with all the different press techniques in my arsenal, though, and it's kind of basically based off film. And what he doesn't like, that's what I'm going to practice, that we could practice and go in there and put it in.
Yeah, I like that. And I know you play with a lot of passion. What is it that fuels you to play with that degree that you play with?
I just love the game of football. I've been playing since I was very little, since I was at a young age. And it's just always been there. I haven't lost love for the game, and I don't see that coming anytime soon. And it's just going out there, knowing my family in the stands, and then also the crowd behind us. And something I do differently, like, I kind of like when I play at opposing home stadiums, like when they're at a home game, we're playing away. It just kind of gets me riled up, and I just love the game of football, just going out there and compete.
Yeah, I definitely can appreciate that. And then what about run defense? Because that's one of the things I see from you, man. Like, if I'm watching TV copy, I'll see number four come flying into the screen, launching himself at the ball carrier. So where does that mindset come and just that approach to have that desire to be involved in run defense?
Yeah, some will label me as a big corner. So, I mean, I got to play like a big corner. That's not only just locking down receivers, but I got to go in there and get in on the run, get the running back down, add extra needed help on the edge or anything like that. So just play physical and just play big.
Yeah, no doubt. 6'1", what did you weigh in at? Just around 200, right?
Yeah.
Now, when you weighed in at the combine, were you heavier than your normal playing weight, or where was that in comparison to the season?
Yeah, I was a couple of pounds heavier than my normal playing weight, probably like 5 or 6.
Okay. Now, did you put on that weight to test better, to test faster, or what was behind that weight add-on?
I feel like behind that weight add-on was going through it wasn't for any specific reason.
Okay.
Kind of just going through the combine process, taking the creatine and things like that. And I think the weight kind of naturally came on. But after the combine, I kind of dropped it off, and I definitely felt faster and lighter for sure.
Man, that creatine is real, man. I know you had to drink a lot of water.
Yes, no doubt, no doubt.
You will cramp up like crazy if you don't, man. I know from experience.
Exactly.
So we're talking about the combine, like what you did on the bench, but that kind of transferred over to the next day of testing with the 40 time. Can you kind of get into that, what happened there?
Yeah, on the bench, I felt I did well. I kind of tweaked my back on the bench, though. But I kind of talked with my agent and my trainer, and I just kind of told him, like, I've been working hard for this. I've been working long for this. Not everybody gets to come to the combine and get to showcase what they can do. So I just tell them, like, I'm going to run regardless. But I didn't feel 100% when I was running, and it kind of showed that.
Yeah.
But after that, I just kind of got healthy, and it just detected at my pro day.
I tell you what was interesting. I remember watching that 40 that you ran, and I said to myself, he doesn't look right. So I'm glad you mentioned that, you know, you ran it regardless. And the thing that tells me is that you're a competitor, and that's one of the A-plus traits as a cornerback. So I want to get into how you developed that mindset. We're going to go back to high school. I mean, look, DeSoto, Texas, I know what it is, man. I did a lot of work with Ellis Hobbs, Jalen Mills, when I was covering the Eagles. You know, I had Chris Lacy on my show, a fellow DeSoto to OK State. And then obviously you got to mention Von Miller. So what's in the water, man? What's going on? Why are you guys so intense as far as competitors are concerned?
DeSoto, man, I don't even know how to explain it. It's just different, man. It's just a different atmosphere. The competitive spirit is always high. It's always talent rolling through there. It's always hard workers. I feel like everybody at DeSoto holds their stuff up to a higher standard and holds the person next to them up to a higher standard. And when you come through there, you're going to come out a competitor. You're going to come out a dog. It's just a different type of mentality there. And, I mean, that's pretty much it.
That makes sense. And then you carried it over to college. And I have to ask, playing in that Big 12 conference, I mean, look, man, you're facing 40 minimum passes per game. How did that prepare you for going to the NFL as far as being in pass cover so much?
I mean, I feel like it prepared me in various ways. I didn't see some of the best receivers. I didn't see some of the best quarterbacks, so I just feel like I did a great job and I held my own from playing against guys like Baker Mayfield or whether it's Hollywood or whether it's Pat Mahomes. I just went to this conference and I just kind of made my statement and showed that I can be one of the best corner covers in the country. And I feel like in the Big 12, it's always going to be harder on the defensive play, especially the back end, because they use every inch of the field. They spread them out, and it's your best guy against their best guy.
CeeDee Lamb called you a baller, and you obviously you mentioned some of the other guys. I mean, you look at David Sills; those were outstanding matchups. As I said before, Mims, Colin Johnson. Who would you say? And I'm saying outside of Tylan Wallace, who is the best receiver? Because I'm not going to let you say your teammate. Who was the best receiver that you faced in your time there at Oklahoma State?
I would say the best receiver I faced my time at Oklahoma State. I didn't came across some good ones. I would probably say the best. It would probably be out of like just this previous year or all of my years.
Let's go all of the years.
Okay, well, all of the years. I would probably say it would probably be out of CD and Rager.
Okay.
CD and Rager. I love those matchups.
I watched the TCU game. That was definitely, you know, a game where you could look back and say, hey, you know what? I did my thing, but I could get some better snaps. So I'm glad you mentioned Rager because those were good matchups. And even when you look at Oklahoma State itself, right? Because one of the other things that I saw in the Oklahoma game against Mayfield, you had an interception. It was a great job coming off of the outside route and drifting towards that other one in the middle of the field and picking it off. I don't think he expected you to be there, but you had that interception. So that tells me there's a lot of film study. There's a lot of coaching. What was it about Oklahoma State and the way they allowed you to not only play press but play zone coverage and really learn the cornerback position? How has that prepared you for the next level?
That prepared me immensely. Playing under Coach Duffy, he's a great coach and also just a great person overall. And he always told me, like, I mean, you got to go out there and make plays. And he would kind of give me little tips here and there and things like that. And we would kind of share insight on how he'll show us film. He'll ask me, like, hey, AJ, what'd you see on film? Because obviously he knew, like, I would kind of get my own film work in. And we just kind of share ideas, just share insight, and just pick up on things. So I could put myself in a position to make plays. And then, of course, our defensive coordinator, he's going to let his corners play. He's going to let his corners press or play off. And he just expects us to go out there and make plays.
And watching you, there were a couple things that stood out to me. And it seemed like you are really good on those outbreaking routes, whether it's comebacks, outs, or whatever it may be. You do a good job of throttling down and then driving to undercut those throws. And then also the ball skills, especially in the red zone on those back shoulder throws and those fades, seemed like you consistently came up with those passes or broke them up. How did you develop an ability to be able to defend those two situations specifically so well?
I see this is rare for somebody who actually did like the film breakdown and actually went in there and kind of broke down the plays and kind of know the position of the corner, I see. But I thank you for that. But it's just training and practice. And then eventually when you train up, it becomes muscle memory. And then it's also, I mean, it's a lot of film. It's a lot of smarts. It's kind of knowing what they want to do. If they're on your hash or if they're on the opposite hash, knowing who's out there, just kind of knowing what the offense wants to get the feel for and kind of how they – also how they throw the ball, because not every team throws the fade ball the same or the out the same. So it's just kind of knowing who you're going up against.
Was there a reason – because it seemed like in watching you, most of the time, especially this past year, you were lining up on the boundary. Was there a particular reason for that?
It usually is. We play boundary and half. Well, it's called boundary and field. We call it half, like the halfback. So basically, the halfback is going to the field and the boundary is, I mean, the corner is in the boundary. And with that, I mainly play boundary, but with the tempo of the Big 12, you really don't have time to go all the way to the boundary, then all the way to the field. So
yeah,
sometimes I will end up in the field, but that's mainly what it is.
Gotcha. Because that's something else that stood out. We talked about controlling what you could control. You couldn't control having to switch teams in Mobile, but how were you able to power through that? In what way did that kind of tax you having to go from one team to the other when you were down there at the Senior Bowl?
It wasn't as bad, because honestly, I didn't even know I was on the North team. Because when I first got there, I was with the South, so I guess they made the change earlier before I got there. So it wasn't too bad.
Gotcha. Okay, and then when you look at one-on-ones there, who were some of the guys you enjoyed going against during that practice week?
Some of the guys I enjoyed going against at the Senior Bowl, I enjoyed going against like Van Jefferson. Yeah. Also, Lipscomb from Vandy. Those are some guys I enjoy getting reps with.
No doubt. We just had Van on the show last week, and you talk about routes, man. He ran some serious routes, so I'm glad you mentioned him. When you move forward to Pro Day, because you were one of the fortunate ones, you got to get your Pro Day in again, and it looked like that 40 time was a bit faster. Go ahead and let the listeners know what you came in at for the 40.
I came in a sub 4.5, and basically I just got healthy. I just took that time off, and I was very blessed and fortunate to be able to get my pro day in and get some good work in. So thanks for that. Because who knew the coronavirus was around the corner and was going to be an unfortunate event. But yeah, that was pretty much it.
And then another thing I have to shout you out on, the Alvin Grant Award for Leadership, Spirit, and Enthusiasm. It shows in watching you play. That being said, have you gotten, because this is a Titans-focused show, so have you gotten to speak to the Titans throughout this process?
Yes, I have been chatting with the Titans, but it's kind of been just meetings and stuff like that over the FaceTime and text.
What have they said they like about you?
The way I play corner, my passion for the game, with some things they hit on, and just kind of how I play many different defenses in the Big 12 and under Oklahoma State, and how I can go from playing like cover one press or playing like off man, just kind of my switch up.
And I know you, I'm not going to call you a fan, but you appreciate Darius Slay's game. What is it about his game that you appreciate? Because he's one of those corners that's really good, but he doesn't get the pub that he should.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like that I kind of compare myself to him because I feel like I'm the same way. Like he's a baller. You just not going to know it, but if you kind of go back and watch the film and check out some of his games, you'll see that he's not the one that's going to do all the talking, all the chatting. He's just going to let his game speak for itself. And that's something with me, I kind of think that people, when they hear about me, they're like, oh, who's that? But when they go check the film, like they're like, oh, yeah, this guy can ball.
Yeah, yeah, they say A.J. Green, I thought he played for the Bengals.
Exactly, no doubt.
Well, before I let you go, and I appreciate you coming on, I will say this. If you end up here in Nashville with the Titans, you will have a date with A.J. Green because the Titans do play the AFC North, which means that they will play the Bengals. So you get to see an A.J. on A.J. Type of crime situation.
Yeah, no doubt. That'll be something I'll be looking forward to.
No doubt. Well, A.J., I appreciate you coming on. Definitely appreciate your game as well. Keep plugging away, man. We'll see what happens. Just over a week, you're going to find out where you are, man. So I wish you the best.
No problem. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Yes, I contribute to Shakila because she left me word as born a sister left me and I left her like no other before. Let it play, let it play. That's Poor Righteous Teachers, Shakila, if you guys don't know. That's what we do, man, old school hip-hop. I saw Calvin over there bobbing his head, too. It's definitely a head bobber. So here we are, man, just over a week out. The draft is coming soon. You heard from Lucas Niang. You heard from A.J. Green. You heard from Javelin Guidry. All of these guys are players the Titans have shown interest in. And I want to focus, before we get out of here, on the cornerbacks. And if you look, Guidry and A.J. Green, these are both players that the Titans could get day two, day three, and actually have players come in and contribute immediately. Guidry would help out in the nickel situations. But you'll say, okay, well, they already have Malcolm Butler and Adoree Jackson. They need a guy to play the slot in sub packages. So how will A.J. Green help? I'll tell you how he could help. A.J. Green could line up on the outside. Adoree Jackson. Now, this is something I'm going to say, and I'm kind of changing course because we definitely have the understanding that Logan Ryan is more than likely gone. Barring some type of true significant change of events, he won't be back. And that's really unfortunate because they're losing a very, very good player. However, I firmly believe that Adoree Jackson could bump inside and play nickel. I would move Adoree inside and play nickel if they're not able to get a Jeff Gladney, an Amik Robinson, a Darnay Holmes type. I think if you move Adoree inside, and what you have to do is go back and look at 2018. And I watched a couple games. One of the ones I watched was the Colts game without Logan Ryan. And I know T.Y. Hilton has kind of been a thorn in Adoree Jackson's side. Hilton had the ankle situation in that 18 game, if I'm not mistaken. But more importantly, Adoree bumped inside, and he and LaShawn Sims, they took turns playing inside in the sub packages. I think Adoree could do it. Now, is he going to be as good of a blitzer as Logan Ryan? No. Is he going to be as good in run support as Logan Ryan? No. However, I don't see anything wrong with having a 4-3 guy coming off the edge going after the quarterback. I don't see anything wrong with having the Adoree Jackson that you saw in the tail end of last year, the aggressive Adoree Jackson. I talked to him in the summertime. He told me specifically that he was looking to change his mindset. Now, I know you guys don't get to deal with Adoree Jackson as much as the media does, but you see videos of him in the locker room. You see videos of him on the field dancing and having fun. I will say his mindset got a bit more intense this year, and it showed on the field. So I will credit Adoree Jackson with increasing his intensity and not being that, oh, nothing in the world is wrong type of guy that he typically is. Here's the deal. You need that mindset when you're playing inside at the nickel. And the thing that I like about Adoree Jackson playing the nickel is he has the speed to run with guys like Tyreek Hill, guys like T.Y. Hilton, guys like, oh, Brandon Cooks is in the AFC South now. By the way, Brandon Cooks was one of the first guys when I first started talking with TD. He was one of my first guests. Yeah, B. Cooks back in 2015, I believe it was. But anyhow, Kenny Stills, Will Fuller, you need guys that could run with him, and I think that's why having Adoree in. Now, that being said, I still feel the way I feel about Darnay Holmes being a guy that they should focus on because he has the speed to turn and do that as well. But you don't want to hone in and put everything on one player at a position. You want to be able to have that flexibility. I like what Adoree Jackson does as far as helping this team not have to go into this, picking a guy specifically playing nickel. That being said, that makes Jeff Gladney and Christian Fulton a bit of a toss-up. We're doing a draft preview, NFL Nation. We're going to do a mock draft. Don't count on Jeff Gladney being the pick. I'm just saying. He may be the pick. He may not. But here's the deal. With what Adoree Jackson does as far as having that ability to play nickel, that changes things. And that makes it a bit easier to go with a different guy. I firmly believe the Titans are coming out of this draft with two corners at a minimum. Now, if that's Gladney, Fulton, A.J. Terrell, Trevon Diggs in the first round, and Amik Robinson in the second or third, or Darnay Holmes, Guidry, whoever it may be, then so be it. But do understand that on day one and day three, at the minimum, do understand this. They're adding at least two corners. They have to. Tremaine Brock is no longer on the roster. Logan Ryan, as we said, is probably gone. LaShawn Sims has moved on. Ty Smith is a guy who will probably be back. But if you look at it, outside of Malcolm Butler and Adoree Jackson, who do they have that's proven? Exactly. Kareem Moore is impressive, but he's still not proven. So we're going to see what happens there. I wanted to take this opportunity to talk a little bit about that, to present something different for you guys to consider as we're getting into the week of the draft. This is awesome. I'm really excited about it. I appreciate Lucas Niang, Javelin Guidry, as well as AJ Green for coming on. We're going to wrap it up with three more prospects for you next week. You're going to like the couple guys that we have on. We have one who will remind you of the Honey Badger. I put that as the teaser. Until then, I appreciate each of you for tuning in. Wash your hands, please. Stay home when you can. And on that note, God bless and good night.